Welcome back to Radio EcoShock. American Fukushima.
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has failed to enforce regulations on American nuclear plants since 1999. I could hardly believe my ears when I heard this and other clear warnings about big risks at U.S. reactors from a panel of experts at the Boston Public Library, June 19, 2011. I'm Alex Smith. In this Radio EcoShock special, you will hear from multiple sources, lax regulation has left well-known and dangerous problems unfixed in U.S. reactors for decades. An American Fukushima nuclear disaster is just waiting to happen. Three sources back that up. The kicker, in this upside-down system, democracy need not apply. You are not allowed to ask about safety. Neither are the state governments or governors, no matter how dangerous. We can argue about the aesthetics of a nuclear plant or economics, but nobody can present safety issues, the most important thing. We'll talk to Professor Peter Bradford from the Vermont Law School to find out how that works. Bradford is a former commissioner of the NRC, and he knows the system isn't working. Let's hear this short explanation from David Lochbaum, nuclear engineer with the Union of Concerned Scientists, on why the NRC stopped enforcing regulations on nuclear power plant safety over a decade ago. The question from the audience at the Boston Public Library is read out by Sandra Gavutis, Executive Director of the C10 Foundation.
What explains the NRC's current inability to enforce its own regulations?
June 4th, 1998. I was sitting at the commission table directly across from NRC Chairman Jackson when I was using the usual bit of whining about the NRC. And she slammed the table and said, if I really believed that, I'd go up to Capitol Hill. I didn't understand at all why she was mad at me for that reason. Turns out that morning, she had received word that the Senate threatened to cut the NRC's budget by 40%. 500 NRC workers would have been laid off very rapidly. The Senate at that time was controlled by Senator Domenici from New Mexico, who was somewhat of an ally of the nuclear industry. The previous year, 1997, 9 U.S. reactors were shut down the entire year to fix safety issues. Chairman Jackson was a regulator. She did enforce the regulations. The plants that didn't meet the regulations did not operate. Pretty simple. The industry didn't like that, so they went to Congress and said, we need to knock this off. So Congress threatened to cut the NRC's budget by 40% unless they stopped doing their job. So it was either lose your job or stop doing your job. They chose the latter. They stopped enforcing in 1999. They haven't enforced many regulations since then. So I criticized the NRC. If they had a spine, they would have resisted the congressional pressure that gave into it. But if you look at MMS or Securities and Exchange Commission, any regulatory body that tries to enforce the regulation, Congress tells them to knock it. Not Congressman Markey and others. They're very strong allies. But unfortunately, the majority of the Congress is pro-business, anti-safety. So the NRC uses any excuse it has for not doing it. Protection of their jobs was the best one in that day.
Don't believe it? We'll get confirmation of lax regulation from a former NRC commissioner. Lochbaum's story is so important, the same threats from Congress have allowed big industry to capture supposed regulatory agencies in almost every field of government, from chemicals to the oil industry. Even the right-wing Cato Institute says the same thing. Lochbaum mentioned the U.S. Mineral Management Service. That agency was supposed to provide safety inspections on rigs like the BP Deepwater Horizon drilling rig, the one that blew up in the Gulf of Mexico last year. The sordid tale of bribes, prostitution, and inaction by the MMS regulators is reported by the Washington Post in an August 24, 2010 article titled, How the Minerals Management Services Partnership with Industry Led to Failure. The Cato Institute is more blunt. Their article is titled, MMS Captured by Industry. So was the Nuclear Regulatory Commission captured. Find all those links in my blog at ecoshock.info. Let's go to our legal expert from Vermont. He'll explain all the crazy legal limitations that keep Americans, state legislatures, and even governors from ever bringing up safety at all. Is the local reactor leaking? Do parts of it fall right over? Shut up. That's not for you to decide. Anyone concerned with nuclear power safety, and we all should be, should listen to this interview closely. What if the people of your community are afraid of an aging nuclear reactor with a history of problems? After multiple nuclear meltdowns in Fukushima, Japan, local citizen action groups are waking up again. In America, they're being joined by state legislatures and governors. Their power to say no to what they perceive as risky nuclear power plants may depend on a lawsuit going forward in the state of Vermont. The Vermont Yankee plant is a General Electric Mark I boiling water reactor, the very same design that exploded in Japan. The owners, Entergy, are up against the Vermont state legislature, who want the operation closed. I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock from New England. We are joined by an expert from the Vermont Law School, adjunct professor Peter Bradford, a former member of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the NRC. Peter, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. Glad to be here.
Well, I appreciate your spending a little time with us. Peter, in February of 2010, the Vermont state legislature, as you know, voted overwhelmingly against continuing the Vermont Yankee plant after 2012. Why does the state want this reactor closed?
It's a complex story because in the U.S., you know, states aren't permitted to regulate nuclear plants on safety grounds. So Vermont has been scrupulous in saying that its concerns are not about safety, and that among legislators, others, the discussion tends to be of reliability or of the adequacy of the decommissioning fund. A broad mixture of reasons, but the word safety can't be mentioned by anyone in an official capacity.
Which is kind of amazing. They can't raise the tritium leaks. The fact that a whole big part of the plant just fell over in 2007, that's never a good sign.
No, and that actually wasn't a safety-related system, but it obviously was an indication that parts of the plant aren't in good repair. But the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission is the only entity that's permitted to shut a plant on safety grounds. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has given Vermont Yankee a license to operate for another 20 years. So the one entity that could close the plant down on safety grounds has declined to do so.
Another issue is the spent fuel. Does that come up at all? I mean, it was a big problem in Japan where some of it started to boil off when the water ran out. Is that part of this lawsuit? Or again, that's a safety issue and it's ruled out?
The safety aspect of spent fuel would be ruled out. The state has in past successfully asserted a right to require Vermont Yankee to get permission to move spent fuel from the pool into what are called dry casks, essentially big concrete containments where the older fuel can be safely stored and air-cooled. That does improve the safety issue a bit because it leaves less in the pool, which is located essentially above the reactor in these old boiling water reactors. But that can't be the state's primary motivation for doing it.
Right. And as you say, Peter Bradford, despite the opposition in Vermont in March 2011, the NRC gave the Vermont Yankee plant and Entergy a license to run for another 20 years. Can you explain now who is suing who as this battle continues?
Yes. When Entergy bought Vermont Yankee in 2002, it entered into an agreement with the state government saying that it would not raise this issue of federal preemption of safety issues. When the plant's license expired in 2012, it agreed that if the Vermont Public Service Board declined to issue a state certificate of public good, it would not continue to operate. After that, the Vermont legislature said, well, the Public Service Board can't issue any such certificate until the legislature gives permission. And as you noted, one house of the legislature last winter specifically voted not to give permission. So now Entergy is suing the state, saying that it is improperly planning to have the plant shut down next March. And it's asked a federal judge to enjoin the state from enforcing that position.
Now, does the limitation on the state's power go back to that 1978 suit, I think it was, with the NRDC, where they asked, and it went right to the Supreme Court, saying that only Well, the state just didn't have the power to put any regulations on safety on the NRC. Is that when it came from that case?
Well, the original law on preemption actually comes from a 1959 amendment to our Atomic Energy Act. In 1982, the Supreme Court decided in a California case that the state could prohibit the building of new nuclear plants on any number of grounds as long as it didn't do so on radiological health and safety grounds. So, for example, if the state were to decide that it was a bad deal economically or that it didn't like the aesthetics or that it would be harmful to the water quality because of the hot water discharge, it could prohibit new plants. And at least implicit in that decision is it would have the power to take action with regard to existing plants on any of those non-radiological health and safety grounds. And Entergy is now seeking to convince the federal court in Vermont that the state is really acting on health and safety grounds or on prohibited economic grounds, and therefore that the court should step in and say no.
And how does the Vermont Law School figure into this? Why are you involved?
I'm actually not involved. I do teach at the Vermont Law School, and the course I teach is nuclear power and public policy, but I have no part in the lawsuit.
And you've been a member of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. When was that, and how were commissioners chosen?
I was on the NRC between 1977 and 1982. Commissioners in the U.S. are appointed by the president, and they have to then be confirmed by the United States Senate.
So really, people could reach out to Obama if they wanted changes in NRC decisions or personnel, could they?
They could with regard to commission appointments, that's right. Of course, he can't change the underlying law, but he can appoint commissioners with different outlooks.
And I want to ask you, in Japan, there was a problem with a revolving door between nuclear regulators and the nuclear power companies. I know it's a touchy subject, but is that happening in the United States as well?
It seems to have happened in some cases. We have one three or four years ago of a commissioner who was discussing his future job prospects with a nuclear company, even as he was voting on matters at the commission that very much affected the financial interests of those who were about to employ him.
I just heard a panel interview with David Lochbaum of the Union of Concerned Scientists, and he claims that since 1999, the plants have been very laxly regulated due to political pressure coming around that time. And the Associated Press has just come out with a report a couple of days ago saying the same thing. What are your thoughts? Do you think that regulations are being enforced, or has there been a kind of letting things slide?
There's no question but what the quality of congressional, that is political, oversight of the NRC influences decision-making. And the NRC has a great many qualified, dedicated, technical employees. But if it is constantly hammered on, as it has been in some past years, by the Congress in a one-sided way, sort of, why haven't you issued more licenses? Why are you regulating the industry so stringently? And no similar level of concern expressed with regard to resolving significant safety issues. That will take a toll. I mean, the episode you referred to back in 99 was one in which the then chair of the committee that controlled the NRC's budget said that he would see that the budget was reduced by one-third unless the NRC took a less adversarial posture toward the nuclear industry. And this senator later wrote a book about that. Well, it was a book about many things, but he described that episode and said with some satisfaction that right after that meeting, the NRC's attitude changed perceptibly.
That was Senator Domenici, is it pronounced?
Domenici is the right pronunciation, yes.
Thank you. Well, when the public objects to a nuclear plant, they find the process is very limited. In the current relicensing process, there are a lot of important questions nobody's allowed to ask, many of them about safety, and many of the details are top secret, maybe because of terrorism or we don't know why. Shouldn't this decision be more open to people whose lives will be affected for another generation?
Absolutely. I mean, the reason why the questioning by members of the public is constrained, not just in relicensing, but in new licensing cases as well, is that the industry found itself, and the NRC found itself, substantially embarrassed by its inability to answer a number of questions back in the 1970s and 80s during the last round of nuclear licensing controversies in the U.S. So when the commission reformed its licensing process in the 1990s, making some sensible changes in order to address nuclear safety issues, they threw in a number of provisions that sharply restricted the public's right to ask questions and to get discovery of documents, to conduct cross-examination. Those changes were completely unnecessary. Not all of the commissioners voted for them, but they do now govern the NRC's rules of practice, and the public is very badly served by them.
Well, I'm hoping after the accident in Japan that will change. You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I am your host, Alex Smith, with adjunct professor Peter Bradford from the Vermont Law School. Peter, let's get back to the lawsuit on the Vermont Yankee nuclear reactor. Is this a states' rights issue?
It's a complicated lawsuit, and it has states' rights issues woven into it. The real states' rights issue, though, is the one that's in the law. I mean, the basic structure of environmental law in the U.S. is that the federal government sets the floors, but states can go further, set the ceilings as to water discharges and air discharges. It's only in the field of radiation health and safety that the states have no voice at all. And that's the real states' rights concern. The law, that piece of the law is now 51 years old. It goes back to a time when the states had pretty limited expertise and the federal government was concerned with safeguarding nuclear secrets. It's really time to take another look and put radiation law on the same footing as other air and water pollution statutes.
Is there a deadline when this case must be decided, when we will know the outcome?
As a practical matter, it had better be decided before March of next year, when the plant will otherwise have to close. So at least the question of whether some kind of preliminary injunction would issue would have to be decided fairly far in advance of that date. Energy's asked for a decision this summer for considerations having to do with refueling and retention of employees. But I think the judge will certainly, whether he decides anything this summer or not, will certainly try to wrap it up this year. But, of course, that's also only the first step. There can then be appeals to higher courts.
It could go all the way to the Supreme Court.
It could indeed.
Peter Bradford, my next question, and we're getting close to the end here. This may go outside the legal situation. I want to ask for your personal opinion, if I may. In my email, I asked you, if a state does not want a particular nuclear power plant and if the population feels unsafe, as it appears to be the case here, exactly who or what is forcing it upon them? What is your opinion on that?
Well, if a state doesn't want a nuclear power plant, there are a number of ways it can prevent it from being built. Shutting down an existing plant is harder. The only thing it can't do is come right out and say, we think this plant is unsafe, and so we don't want it. I would favor changing the law so that if a state, for example, had no confidence in the reliability of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, it could at least say yes or no at the beginning of the plant siting process as to whether it wanted the plant at all. I mean, there's good reason not to have two different levels of government regulating the way operators have to be licensed. But when it comes to a simple yes or no as to whether to have the nuclear plant, there's no reason why a state shouldn't be able to exercise a veto at that time.
I wonder if we held a plebiscite in the state before allowing a new reactor to be built, whether one would ever be built.
I think in some states there would, and in some states there wouldn't. And that's not a bad way to leave it. You know, if they turn out to be a good idea and a good investment, states that are prepared to go ahead with them will profit accordingly, and presumably some of the others will change their mind. But we are a democracy, and of course we respect property rights, but there's no real property right in a plant that hasn't been built yet.
Well, nobody wants to see a Fukushima in America. Nuclear owners don't want that crushing liability. We've seen what happened to Tokyo Electric. What can we do to improve nuclear regulation to make the whole system safer? Do we need changes to the NRC, for example?
Well, it would be a real contribution if the NRC or the Congress at this point were to take a look at the series of events and concerns that have come to light in recent months, and just from an independent standpoint, ask what the root causes are here, whether it's congressional pressure, whether it's industry pressure. Why are there at least half a dozen, and depending who's counting, maybe a couple of dozen examples of the NRC tilting in years past too heavily toward the industry, and so very few, if any, examples of it's ever tilting the other way, and come out with an analysis of whether that's the case, and if so, why it's the case, and what needs to be done to fix it. The current commission's in a pretty good position to do that. The present chair hasn't been implicated in these events for the most part. Most of the other commissioners are brand new, so they haven't been either. It would be a good time to take that kind of a look and make something of a break with the agency's past.
This is Radio EcoShock. Our guest has been Peter Bradford. He's an adjunct professor of the Vermont Law School with experience on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Peter, thank you for helping us out with this.
Okay, my pleasure, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith. So it's an open story. In America, dozens of plants in the nuclear industry have hardly fixed any major known flaws. Things that could cause meltdowns because regulation is non-existent and enforcement is non-existent. Now, after Fukushima, it's a big open story. Ugly nuclear secrets are coming out of the closet all over the place. One big breaking story crammed with NRC in action and frightening near misses comes from Jeff Don of the Associated Press, that's spelled D-O-N-N. His series is devastating. Don's exposure is our third confirmation that American nuclear regulators repeatedly watered down the rules or are, quote, simply failing to enforce them. Find links to the AP series of reports in my blog at ecoshock.info. If you are just tuning in, we're looking at the lax regulation and long-standing faults at U.S. nuclear power plants that could produce an American Fukushima. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. I've got more shocking audio for you, courtesy of the C10 Foundation. Let's start with longtime nuclear industry executive Arnie Gunderson on the flooding threat to the Fort Calhoun nuclear reactor in late June 2011.
The lesson I learned is no matter how smart you are, Mother Nature's smarter. There's two nuclear plants. I don't know if you've been following this, but if you're in Nebraska, you're following it. You better believe it. There's been a lot of runoff. There's been an enormous amount of snow in the Rockies. Several of the rivers that run down out of the Rockies, and this is the Missouri, are at flood stage. Actually, they're way over flood stage. The Missouri is about ready to breach the levees at this nuclear plant. That's what we call a design basis accident. That's what you build for. And you shouldn't expect to have a design basis accident. Everybody thinks, well, we put some extra heft into this. This is right at the top of the levees now. Yet it happened in 1993 as well. So when you have two design basis accidents in 20 years, the lesson is maybe we really need to build these levees a little higher, but it doesn't happen. The other piece of this is that what Fukushima told us is that, you know, we anticipated a tsunami, but we didn't anticipate the mother of all tsunamis. The reason the Missouri is flooded right now is because there's six dams upstream that are full to capacity, and if they get any fuller, they're going to break. So all of the pipes are discharging all of the water they can downstream to prevent the dams from breaking. Well, I live in a what-if world. What if one of those dams break? The applicant, the guy who owns this plant, doesn't have to design for that. So we are one dam breakage away from our own Fukushima in Nebraska right now. Here, you guys had the Cape Ann earthquake. I don't know if you remember that back in 1690 or something like that. It leveled Boston. And don't think that the Cape Ann earthquake is the worst that you can expect. I mean, Mother Nature's teaching us here that she can throw stuff at us. It's a lot more difficult than we've anticipated. Yet the New England plants are designed as their design basis earthquake is Cape Ann. And the records back then were not too great. So we're going on a very slim history. On the West Coast, you've got Diablo Canyon. 3 miles offshore is a fault that they discovered after they built the plant. But it's grandfathered in because they discovered it after they built the plant. And down the coast is San Onofre. And the tsunami wall there is 9 meters or about 28 feet. You know, we need to reevaluate. Mother Nature can do a lot more to us than we want to believe.
Now to David Lochbaum from the Union of Concerned Scientists. And remember, this is just part of an hour-long catalog of problems in American reactors and how they compare to what happened in Japan.
A mere 53 of the 69 reactors are very likely to have this meltdown if there's an accident. 53 out of 69 since 1978. The good news is that the NRC has asked plant owners to fix this problem, giving a toaster oven to the first one who did it, which turned out to be Davis Bessie for other reasons. But many of the reactors are now fixed. They've put larger screens inside the containment so it takes more debris to clog it. Those reactors that have fixed the problem have really lessened the likelihood that that problem exists. However, there are 20 reactors that have just said no. And the NRC has said, please? And they said, NRC, no. We're trying to get the NRC to get those 20 reactors to fix this problem that many other reactors have fixed, and hoping in the meantime that this doesn't happen at the plant in your backyard, because it's very likely that it won't work. Earlier than President Carter being warned, there was a fire at the Browns Ferry plant in Alabama that was owned and operated by the Tennessee Valley Authority. The worker using a candle to look for air leaks started a fire that was in the room just below the control room. All the cables from the control room passed through this room, right below the control room, and then went out to various equipment in the plant. So the plant had all of its electricity, but all the cables between the controls in the control room and the equipment in the field was lost. Unit 1 at Browns Ferry lost all of its emergency equipment. The fire damaged all the cables. Unit 2 lost most of the safety systems due to the fire. So the NRC said, this is too close. They adopted rules in May of 1980 to prevent the next Browns Ferry. This is the NRC's list of plants that don't meet those regulations and don't meet an alternative set of regulations that the NRC adopted in 2004, saying, could you please meet one of the set of regulations? Just say no. 50 reactors in the United States, roughly half the fleet, are not protected in case of a fire for regulations that were adopted 3 decades ago. NRC in action. And ironically, one of the plants that doesn't meet the regulations is Browns Ferry in Alabama that started it all, has absolutely no excuse, but they don't meet it. Roughly a decade ago, we suffered 9/11. The NRC after 9/11 imposed security requirements for plants to meet to make their plants less vulnerable to acts of malice. Today, the NRC knows that there are several plants that don't meet those regulations. Their owners have said, can we have more time? Apparently, we're waiting for terrorists to retire is our new safety protection system. I just assume that if we identify security shortcomings, we go out there and fix them. We don't put them on a list and ask and beg and coax the plant owners to meet the security regulations. It'd be nice if the NRC enforced its own regulations.
Due to time limitations, I've placed a transcript and links on more American nuclear problems in my Radio EcoShock blog, dated June 22, 2011. Find that at ecoshock.info. That's it for this week. Find this show and all our past programs as free MP3 downloads at our website, ecoshock.org. I'm your bearer of bad tidings, apparently, Alex Smith. Good for you for hanging in there. Now let's do something about it.